On today's show, the Cleveland Cavaliers lose in Donovan Mitchell's return to Utah. We'll break that all down. Where went wrong for Cleveland on this new episode?
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in is from our friends at Astral Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. I'm Chris Manning. You can find me through the Sword, Diamond Up Rocks, and other places. I'm solo today. Evan is in Utah. He is still at the arena, and I need to get this done so I can get to bed in the wee hours of the Eastern Standard Time. But didn't want to leave you guys, you listeners out there, without a show coming out of this game because a lot happened. Cavs lose 116 to 114 to the Utah Jazz. Drops them to 8-11, on the road. Donovan Mitchell, in his first game back in Utah, played great. It was great. 36 minutes. Okay, pretty good. 46 points. His fifth 40-plus point game of the season. Six assists against just zero turnovers. Five boards, 14 of 27 from the field, 7 of 18 from three, 11 of 11 from the line. Evan Mobley was great in this game, really stepped up in the absence of Jared Allen, who plays 6 minutes and 45 seconds of this game and did not return due to an undisclosed non-COVID illness. Darius Garland, 21 and 30 minutes. Jordan Clarkson led the Jazz with 32 points and 11 of 19 shooting. So, a couple ways to, I think, look at this game. I think just to start off, it was kind of weird. I think Mitchell and Mobley were really transcendent in their own specific ways. Mobley, to start with him, comes out in the fourth quarter and I thought played one of the best defensive quarters we have ever seen him play. This was a dominant defensive game from him late. There's no Jared Allen. He has to kind of figure out how to kind of eat everything up in the paint, rotate over, block his own man, keep everything kind of in line, and he stepped up in the absence of Jared Allen and was the rim protector, was the guy at the rim, kind of denying everything. He had all four of his blocks in the fourth quarter. He was great. And look, Mitchell, again, was utterly sensational. Has a 17-point fourth quarter. He was 7 of 11 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3. Didn't even, all of his free throws came before that. He's just making tough shots in the fourth quarter. He's doing Donovan Mitchell stuff, things we've seen him do over and over and over again this year. And then you have the 7-point play with Jordan Clarkson that kind of felt like it tilted the balance of this game, tilted the momentum of this game. I think if you're Cleveland, you feel like you should have probably won this game. You feel like this is a game that, because of how great Mitchell was, because of how good Mobley was down the stretch, because you got good minutes from Lamar Stevens, because you came back from a kind of just tripping on yourself to come out in the third quarter and then coming back and making this a game and taking the lead and just having all that momentum, as much as that exists as a thing, you had this game in your hand and you get this 4-point play. Now we can, or 7-point possession from Clarkson, Now let's talk through that for a second. That is the call that was made is, like, I think by the letter of the rule, the right call. What sucks about it for Caris LeVert is that I don't know what else he's supposed to do in that situation. He didn't, like, do one of the Zaza Pachulia, like, really step under him kind of things. Clarkson's feet really extend out, and he's just kind of there. So I don't really know what he's supposed to do. I get why the officials call foul. Do I think it was a flagrant? Not necessarily. I don't think that was a malicious play by any stretch of the imagination, although I get how they call that play. That in itself is just like a weird, just reality. Okay, you get that, you deal with that, and you move on. And then he gets called again for a foul right after that when Clarkson feels him on his back cape and he rises up and gets the foul call. I get that call too. I don't love it. I think it's kind of grifting basketball, and it's not particularly, like, fun to watch, or do I think it's, like, really within the flow of what a game can be. But you call it and you live with it and you move on. If you're Cleveland, you kind of just have to do that and kind of overcome some of that stuff, and you couldn't maybe shouldn't have been as bad in the start of the third quarter. Maybe like some of these other things that kind of were a little wonky in this game, you should have just handled better, or maybe you get a lucky break here or there. And that, and maybe that's enough, but it wasn't here. And that play just felt like a big, big moment. There's not a ton of time left in this game when that happens, right? Like, this is Clarkson. The Cavs at one point in this court, in this game are up five. Okay. Clarkson, they go on this little run. The Jazz, by the time the Cavs are able to kind of get another bucket, they're up. When they go up five, they're up 107 to 102. The Cavs don't score again until it's 115-109 Utah. That's with 15 seconds to go. So they go this whole stretch, like 3 minutes without a bucket. The seven-point play happens in that stretch. The Jazz keep taking a bunch of free throws in this. Mitchell misses a three. Donovan, he misses a couple of threes in this one. LeVert misses a makeable three. Nothing just kind of falls through in that stretch. And so that seven-point possession for Clarkson just kind of feels like it's snowballed into something bigger. And that's tough. And that's a tough way to lose. Again, I think you should, if you want to have some gripes about that officiating and calling a flagrant and calling the foul, like, I get it. I think they're sort of within the rules of law. I don't love them as far as like functional basketball calls go, but I get why they exist. I get why they happen. It also shouldn't take away from how good Mitchell was in his return to Utah. 46, again, just, he's having, I think, just a transcendent season. He's having an All-NBA season. This is the best basketball team that he has ever played. He got a really warm reception. Kelsey Russo wrote a really great story about what he did off the court. Tony Jones has wrote some really great stuff. Like, there's been a ton of great Mitchell stuff on his return to Utah. And he caps it off with a performance that is kind of that is like the capstone of all of these firsts for him this year. He's been back to the Knicks. He's been back to, or gone to the Knicks after thought he was going to go there and look tentative. You know, he has his first game in Cleveland. He has his first game with the Jazz now, even if he doesn't play. He plays, you know, Royce O'Neal, one of his best friends. Like, he's had all these firsts, and this is kind of the big one. And I'll go back next month for the All-Star game, one would assume. And that'll be a moment, too. But he was great in this game. Mobley's great in this game. And it kind of feels like that's going to get overshadowed by some of the stuff that went wrong down the stretch. And we'll talk about that more in segment two. But he was sensational. The Cavs probably should have won this game. They should feel kind of weird about how that happened, how they lost. Even if those calls are right, even if you don't love them, I don't love them, they're probably the right call by the letter of the law. And that kind of sucks. But them's the break. Sometimes you get a little bit unlucky and you lose, even though Mitchell and Mobley were transcendent. Okay, we're going to come back after this break. We're going to give out game awards. So that's going to be my MVP, my stat of the night, and my play of the night. But first, I got to tell you about our friends from Prize Picks. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. So how does Prize Picks work? All you have to do is pick 2 to 6 players, and if they will go score more or less in their Prize Picks projections. You can up to 25 times your money on any single entry. It's not competing against other people. It is just you versus the projections available. Prize Picks offers projections on any sport that you watch. This includes the NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, PGA, college football, men's college basketball, women's college basketball, soccer, WNBA, esports, NASCAR, tennis, MMA, boxing, disc golf, Eurobasket, cricket, and more. Wow, that's a lot. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It is that easy. Safe and fast withdrawals, currently operational in over 30 states and Canada. Download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code LOCKEDON. If you deposit $100, Prize Picks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, Prize Picks will give you $50. Don't forget to enter the promo code LOCKEDON at sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for an instant deposit match at Prize Picks. All right, back here in Lockdown Cavs, Chris Manning here solo with Evan out doing Lord knows what in Utah. MVP has to be Donovan Mitchell. I'm going to give co-MVPs because I want to talk about Evan Mobley, and he was just, I will maybe come away thinking about him out of this game in some ways more than Mitchell. But look, how do you not give it to Mitchell? He has this fantastic return to Utah Here's his final stat line. This is just kind of crazy. 46 points for Mitchell. Okay. Fifth 40-point game of the season for him. I think 13th overall in his career, John Michael said on the broadcast. 14 of 27 from the field, 7 of 18 from 3, 11-11 from the line, 6 assists, 5 boards, 3 steals, 0 turnovers. I mean, this is a game where, like, you just need, he just took over. Like, Garland was fine, Mobley was great defensively, you know, you didn't have Allen, you got good minutes from some other guys. Mitchell just kind of took over. He was just awesome. And it wasn't just like a one quarter thing. This was a 12-point first quarter. This was a 13-point second quarter. This was a, you know, he has 4 points in the third, and then it's like, all right, I'm going to drop 17 in the fourth. Like, utterly 3 out of 4 quarters, he is arguably the best player on the floor for either team, just competing and going after it, making shots until the final whistle. Utterly great performance from him. But let's talk about Evan Mobley for a second. Look, I understand there's some concern or you know, thought that maybe he is not progressing as quickly as people would like. We've talked about that. You can go back and listen from a couple days ago about how we discussed this at length and about what Bickerstaff has said about that and what it kind of means in the context of where he's kind of at and how it compares. And, you know, I think there's interesting discussions to be had about, like, him as a development piece and Scottie Barnes and Jalen Green. And, you know, Cade obviously is in a different class now because it was injury. But, like, those how these that class of all developed or not developed, I think is kind of an interesting case study because there are all these very different circumstances. But if you have any doubts about Evan Mobley, if you have any doubts about what this guy can be and how impactful he can be, or you didn't come away from this game impressed, I don't think you know how to watch basketball. I don't think you know what this guy can do. Fourth quarter was one of the most dominant stretches of defensive basketball he has ever played in the NBA. Maybe the most dominant, I think, I can see him in real time. He's in the paint. He's blocking shots. He's contesting shots. He is everywhere. He's eating up space. He's walling up. There's nothing he didn't do in that fourth quarter that wasn't like a high, high, stout defensive performance. That wasn't all defense level. That wasn't indicative of a guy that I think at his defensive peak could win and maybe will win like a defensive player of the year award, maybe one or two defensive player of the year awards. He's that special on that end of the floor. Fourth quarter, he takes one shot. He makes one shot. Okay. 1-1 from the field. He's 1-2 from the line, 3 points. Played 11 minutes and 53 seconds. Even with Mitchell and Mitchell taking 11 of Cleveland's 24 shots in the fourth, it's kind of hard for like your five to only take one shot. And yet I don't know how much I care because the defense was that good. He's just, again, blocking shots, eating space up. He just stepped into not having Jared Allen there. It took a little bit for the Cavs to get there and figure out how to play without Allen. There's no denying that, right? Like, they went to no center lineups when Allen goes out. I don't think that they looked like all comfortable in those looks. I think there's something to be said that's maybe like a look you got to develop in time, and Mobley kind of can unlock some of those. But when it comes time for them to really have this game on the line and they need Mobley to just be the best version of himself defensively, he stepped up. This is a defensive superstar performance. This is like, go back and watch it. Go watch the clips. Go on NBA.com and like look back at his blocks. He's doing everything. Everything he could have done in this game, he did, was just like unreal. Like, and this goes into my play of the night, which is a Mobley play. 8:44 to go, fourth quarter. Ochai Agbaji drives from the corner and gets blocked by Evan Mobley. So this possession does end in a second chance dunk for Jared Vanderbilt, which isn't great. And if you're Cleveland, like, you got someone else has to step up and grab the rebound and end that possession if Mobley's going to do this. But it is so hard if you're a big to have to stay in step with a guard coming or a wing or anyone in an athlete coming at you from the corner and attacking you that way. And they have all the momentum. They have the ramp up of speed. They have all of that. And you just kind of like casually rotate through it, move your hips well, block the shot. and the possession for that player when like they're thinking, oh, I'm going to get a dunk, or like they could have taken a corner three, but they passed it up and attacked the rim and trying to get an easy look or get fouled. Mobley just erases that. He is that good. And look, again, you got to get the rebound. There's other blocks he had that were more highlight. I think, you know, he had the one that just straight up swatted it out of the lane. This play is just like, my goodness, man, this guy can play defense like no one else, really. And he's so skilled. He is so smooth. He is just dominant defensively when he's at his very best. And he's going to grow into something incredibly special. This game is further proof of that. I also want to shout out one Lamar Stevens play from this game. Fourth quarter, pumps, gets a flyby and a pump fake, pulls up from like a long two, makes it. Mitchell was wide open, so maybe he should have just passed it to Mitchell and let Mitchell stick the above the break three that he was wide open on. But he hits the jumper and he did something from the corner. If Lamar's going to play, and he played well in this game, I kind of think that he has to do some stuff like that. He can't just like not take corner threes or dribble in and pass it off. Like, he has to do stuff. And that's the kind of play, like, if he's going to do that and take that with confidence. And that was like a repertoire for him at Penn State. That was something he could do at Penn State. That's part of his offensive load when he was, you know, a lead guy at Penn State. He has to do that stuff. So that was a big play for him. And you want to see him doing stuff like that. And I love that Mitchell gives him this like big high five after that. All right. So stat of the night, a couple ways you could go with this. I'm going to give you three and you can choose your own adventure in this one. So four blocks for Mobley in the fourth. I talked about him. He was great. He has one shot in the whole quarter. And this is just defensive dominance from Evan Mobley. I will be thinking about that defensive performance in relation for quite a while. Secondly, so Donovan Mitchell, game high 46 points. He had his 500th career steal in this game when he got his third of the night. Here's the stat, though. His 46 points are the second most in a player's first road game against his former team all time. That is behind only John Williamson from the New Jersey Nets. Back in April of 1978, when he went back to Indiana and scored 50 points. Second most in a player's first road game versus his former team. That's good. I you know, sources say that that's really, really good, really, really impressive. Lastly, here's maybe one way this game also just kind of falls apart that maybe gets overlooked, I think, and I certainly think overlooked it in my initial thoughts about this game. Fourth quarter, there's a big free throw disparity. The Cavs take two free throws. The Jazz took 19. The Jazz were 16 of 19 from the field in a quarter that they lost by two. Cavs win the fourth quarter 30-28. That's a close game. They only lose by two, obviously, but the Jazz scored over half of their points from the free throw line. Malik Beasley at two, Mike Conley at two, Larry Markkanen, who's 0-6 from the field and 0-2 from three in the fourth, 6-6 from the line. Jordan Clarkson, who absolutely killed the Cavs late in this game, obviously, 5-7. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, 1-2. Jazz got into the penalty. They attacked. They drew fouls. You know, Evan Mobley, as good as he was, like, did have three fouls in the fourth quarter. You know, you did have two on Garland in this quarter. You had three on Caris LeVert, and two really, really big ones. You had one on Lamar Stevens. Those free throws do the Cavs in as well. As much as the seven-point play, as much as some of the other things that went wrong or didn't go Cleveland's way, or they just get unlucky, that's just, and maybe this is an unlucky thing. Maybe this is just, you know, being on the road, whatever it is. 19 free throws, and the Jazz scoring over half of their points in the fourth quarter from the free throw line is just a really big deal. It's hard to win a basketball game as well as Donovan Mitchell played, as good as Evan Mobley was, as contributions you got from other guys like Lamar Stevens were, it's hard to kind of overcome like a massive, massive thing. The Jazz shot 20% from the field in the fourth quarter. They shot 16% from three, and they won. Wild stuff. Weird game. All right. After the break, I'm going to talk a little bit about the impact of the Kevin Durant injury on the Cavs for the next couple weeks, and also a little bit about the rotation in this game. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Bet Online. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your info, stats, news, and analysis this season when it comes to sports betting. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there. from pro football to college bowl season to basketball and so much more. They've got it all at BetOnline.net. For title odds right now in the NBA, the Celtics have the best odds in the league at plus 400. The Bucks are second at plus 600. The Nets are next at plus 750, and the Warriors are at plus 900. The Cavs, meanwhile, come in at plus 1800. That is the eighth best odds in the NBA as of right now. If you love sports podcasts, and you know I'm sure you do, you can even find those at BetOnline as well. They are always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting info. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more. That is BetOnline. That is where the game starts. Again, check them out today. They got all kinds of NBA stuff there. Go check them out. Okay, last segment, Locked On Cavs podcast. Chris Manning here solo with you. A couple of final things from this game. I think the rotations in this game sometimes felt a little bit off. I didn't understand I think the Jetty Osman thing, I understand hesitancy from the coaching staff with him, but like his stretch is really needed. I would have maybe liked to seen a little bit more of him. I do think Okoro defensively maybe was the right fit late in that game instead of LeVert, just to kind of contain Clarkson. I didn't kind of understand what was going on with him after he starts, and then he doesn't play a ton in the second quarter, and like his minutes felt a little bit low to me in this game. Doesn't play at all in the second quarter. That was kind of weird. I think it's a small thing. I just didn't feel like, I feel like they were scrambling a little bit. J.B. Bickerstaff and his staff were kind of searching for things because Allen goes out with an illness. We don't know what that means for him, by the way, in relation to him playing Thursday in Portland or when they play in Minnesota on the weekend. But we'll have updates here on the show as that happens. We'll cover it other places. But like I felt like they were looking for lineups that kind of worked and just trying to find stuff. And some of the buttons I might have hit a little bit differently. So the last thing about Mitchell in this game, I think this is something of a turn the page moment. Mitchell is now done with his firsts. There's no more going to New York for the first time or playing at home for the first time. Like he is like, this is fully kind of like, okay, you're here now. Like you've gotten all your firsts out of the way. This was the big one. Like, you know, again, All-Star be a big deal, but I think this is just a notable landmark date in this. January 10th, last time we kind of, Mitchell has some of the new, like, yes, he will have his first playoff series with Cleveland and all that stuff. There's still some like first to come as the season goes on and they play really big games and they get to the playoffs and all of that. But this was like the big, big, big one. He will, you know, maybe he goes somewhere else someday, whatever. But like in terms of right now in this present moment, this is like the one time he has to go back to his former place that he grew up in the NBA and deal with playing there for the first time and see everyone that he maybe hadn't seen in a while and all that stuff. And that in itself is just a big deal. I know he saw some of the people in Cleveland when the Jazz were in town. Like I remember like before he did his media, he was on the over by the Jazz locker room and stuff, like talking to people like back end staff and things, which is really cool to see. But this is like his first time back in Utah. That was always going to be a really big deal, an emotional night, a big deal. It's one of those kind of moments you want to see what it's like for him, and it's on this long road trip. But this was the last one of those. And I guess playoffs will come, all of that. But this is like the big one. So that to me, that is something of a milestone. Last thing. Kevin Durant, as people may have seen, and you're probably wondering, oh, why is Chris talking about Kevin Durant? Here's the thing. The top of the East is a bloodbath. It is just an absolute, like, drag them out, you know, rock them, sock them robots, like, competitive slog for the East right now. As it stands, here's the top five in the East, and these are the five best teams, I think, in the conference. Boston's at number one. They're a game and a half up on the Nets, who are second. The Bucks are third. The 76ers are fourth, and the Cavs are fifth. The Cavs, just by virtue of having played two more games than Philly, have a slightly lower winning percentage, even though they have one more win, one more loss, or they're both 3.5 games back of Boston, but they're fifth right now. Kevin Durant has been having like an MVP season. The Nets just went on that 118-20. Durant's playing at a crazy level. Like they still won 9 of 10. But Durant got hurt the other day. He has an MCL injury. This is like third, I believe, MCL injury in that knee. And we'll see how long he's going to be out. He could be out a month. They're saying 2 weeks. We'll see if it's a month. You know, we'll see what the reevaluation that the team said they're going to have looks like in 2 weeks. They said, Woj just reported that it's going to be a month. This is now a window for the Cavs to do some damage here. You have to maximize these little opportunities that you get when maybe like Kyrie and Ben Simmons and Nick Claxton, maybe they like are, they handle this month well and they deal with it. Like the Nets schedule, like maybe they just handle it and the Nets win enough games to tread water. You know, like they have some winnable games on their schedule the next month. Like they will play, they do play Boston on Thursday, but like they play the Suns, who are reeling right now. They play the Pistons. They play the Spurs. Like they have some winnable games between now and you get to the All-Star break, and you know, like you're in a good spot there. Like let's say it doesn't come back to the All-Star break, so after the All-Star break, like they have a somewhat manageable schedule over that stretch. Like some tough games, but you know, like they can manage, and maybe KD comes back after the All-Star game. If you're Cleveland, I think like the goal should be not the optimal outcome is to not be in the fifth seed or even the fourth seed. I think you want to be top three. Brooklyn, I think, has just been maybe the second best team in the conference on aggregate for the year. They're either third, maybe behind Cleveland in there, even but they're second in the standings right now. They've been incredible of late. Katie's a big part of that. So he's out. What does that look like? Does that open up a door for Cleveland or Milwaukee or Philly to push and make a run? Like again, the Cavs are two games back of the Nets. If Durant misses a month, that's a decent chunk of games. Maybe the Cavs, look, they have a tough schedule as well. You look at some of the you know, they have the Pelicans at home on Monday. They have the Grizzlies on the road next week. They have the Warriors. They have the Bucks. They have the Clippers at home. They have like the Heat. They have the Grizzlies again. Like they have tough games of their own mixed in with like, you know, some little easier games like against Houston, against Detroit. If you're Cleveland, this is one of those stretches where I think if you can play well, you can rack up some wins the game you're supposed to. Maybe you don't have another unfortunate kind of ill luck with this Jazz game. Maybe, you know, you just get some things that break your way. This could be one of those moments where you look back and say, okay, while Durant was out, we did enough. We maximized that opportunity. It's unfortunate. Like maybe you want to go head to head and compete against the very best and all of that. But if you can rack up some nice wins this next month and then it slide just a little bit, maybe that gives you an edge. You could sneak get into the top three. You can avoid, you know, playing, being on the road in the first round or having a harder path to get out of the first round. Because, look, if the season ended today, it's Cavs Sixers in round one. Of the top, you know, other good teams, these, that's the team I most want to play if I'm Cleveland. But it's so hard. It's Joel Embiid. It's dealing with that and dealing with everything that they can present you. If you get in the top three and you could get Indiana or the Knicks or the Hawks or one of these teams, like you should feel better about getting out of the first round and advancing. And Cleveland should, I think, have a really good chance to get out of the first round anyway. But you maximize your seeding, maximize your home court, give yourself the best chance possible to make the most of this season. This next month is going to have a part of that. We'll go back out at the end of the year. This is one of the things that I will go back and look at and say, okay, how did they do that month while Durant was out? How did the Nets do? Did that matter at all? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this won't matter. But this is just one of those things where my brain said, okay, it sucks to not get to watch KD with how well he's playing. It's just a basketball fan. But free for Cleveland and viewing it through that prism, this is one of those months where, like, if you can rack up some wins, maybe the Nets take a step back, that opens up a door for you to build back and make this a race, as after the Nets were just kind of boat racing people the last stretch of time here. Okay, that is it. Thanks again for listening to Locked On Cavs, your first listen every day. Thanks again to Jake Stevens for producing us. For next listen, check out Game to Game NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result, Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA. It's available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chris. We'll be back tomorrow to talk more about Mitchell and Utah, more about what's going on with the Cavs, and check in really at the halfway point of the season. We are in the second half of the year now, so we'll do a kind of 41 game or so check-in, 42, not technically, but we'll dive into the first half of the year. Evan will be back. Until then, I'm Chris. Peace out. Be well. Stay out.